The Poskim Hilchos Purim quote a custom that many people have of making their seuda late in the afternoon. So one of the reasons for this is that it schleps into the night also. So in Purim, you have that added dimension that it's Shushan Purim, so it's still a little bit of a celebration. We don't consider that to be a detraction from the Simchas HaPurim. Simchas HaPurim schleps a little bit afterwards. So into this morning in Yeshiva, so there were a whole array of different shiurim related to Inyanim of Eretz Yisrael. So I figured even though it's ready after Shkia, could be it's ready after Tetzke Chom already, but we could schlep it out a little bit also. So we'll try to give tonight's shiur be a special shiur also, dedicated to an Inyan, a sugi related to Eretz Yisrael. But rather than a specific halacha per se, I want to give also a little bit of an overview in terms of halacha slash history as to what the halachic significance of Eretz Yisrael has been and is now and will continue to be throughout our history. So even though we have a connection with Eretz Yisrael going all the way back to the days of the Avos, in the pure world of halacha, there have been certain nuances, certain changes as to what the halachic ramifications of Eretz Yisrael were in the days of the Avos, in the days of Yeshua Benun, the days of the Churban, the days of Bayesheni, the days post-Bayesheni, but today, most of Mashiach. There are a lot of different eras in our long, long, long history, and try to give a little bit of the highlights as to what role Eretz Yisrael has played in terms of, in the pure halachic sense of the word, how things have almost like shifted and moved around a little bit over the last 3,000 plus years. So bear with me, we'll try to get 3,500 years or so in the course of about 35 minutes, so we're putting the seatbelts. So let's start with the beginning. Our first connection with Eretz Yisrael is, of course, those opening words, Lechem Eretzcha. So even though it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already chosen Eretz Yisrael from before that, from the time of Bris Olam, but the first time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us as the beginnings of the people, Avraham Avinu, that Eretz Yisrael is significant, is those words of Lechem Eretzcha. So even within those first words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructing Avraham Avinu to go into Eretz Yisrael, there was actually a very, very serious halachic issue. And a halachic issue that, again, we're talking about a world pre-Matan Torah, but even pre-Matan Torah, there were halachas, certain halachas that had to be observed. Avraham Avinu was in a little bit of a dilemma. It's a dilemma that has repeated itself time and time again, and it plays out in today's world very, very, very often. And that is, Avraham Avinu had contradictory considerations here. On the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him to go to Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, his father was still alive. So even though the Pasuk does say, Vayomas Terach B'charan, and it almost a little bit misleads us to think that Terach was no longer alive. So if you just simply do the math, as Rashi does in the end of Parshas Noach, it's simply not true. Terach was quite alive for quite some time after Avraham Avinu left him and went off to Eretz Yisrael. Why the Torah presents him as Terach B'charan is a whole different story, and different Mamre Chazal as to why that's so, but the reality was Terach was still alive. And here Avraham Avinu is a little bit of a quandary because on the one hand, he has the mitzvah of Kibra Ba'eim. Again, whether a Ben Noach has the formal mitzvah of Kibra Ba'eim, but Afal Bichein, everybody agrees that it's the right thing to do. It's the moral, ethical thing to do to take care of one's elderly parents. And yet, he's coming to conflict because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling him, Lein Chame Yatzecha. So the question is, what did Avraham Avinu do? So we know exactly what he did. He left. He left Terach behind, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. So there was a big machlekes aposkim. What lesson should we learn from this? What can we extrapolate from this? So there are some poskim who said that what we can extrapolate from this is that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is actually docha, the mitzvah of Kibra Ba'eim. We know that there are many, many areas in our lives where we have contradictory messages, we have different mitzvahs that come into clash with one another. And so we have V'chai Bahem, and we have Shmir Shabbos, or we have Mila on the eighth day and Tul Shabbos, and we have Asay and Alos Asay. So there are rules in halacha, which mitzvahs take precedence over others. Some poskim wanted to argue that from here we learned that it must be that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael takes precedence. That would have obviously far-reaching conclusions for us today. And the other poskim will say, actually, the exact opposite is true. Some poskim say that this was the exception to the rule. Rather than Avraham Avinu being the rule, he was the Yetzim and Echlal, he was the exception to the rule. He was given an absolute sivoy, but before Kadosh Baruch Hu came to him and said, Lechcha Me'atzcha. So Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, forget what it says in your Shulchan Aruch. This is what you have to do. I'm telling you what to do. What do we do? So that's a different question. So you have to figure out, you have to learn the sugyas, you have to learn the sugyas of Maaseh Kedushin, figure out what the hierarchy is. So if we bring a raya from Avraham Avinu, may actually be a raya in the opposite direction. So it's not a great surprise that this is still an ongoing debate with the poskim of Halacha L'maaseh today. What would the din be when there would be a clear-cut contradiction between Kibra Ba'eim versus the leader of Israel, which would take precedence? Is Avraham Avinu the model, or is Avraham Avinu almost the exception to the rule? But the bottom line is Avraham Avinu takes the challenge, and he follows, and he goes to Eretz Yisrael. And then, as he's in Eretz Yisrael for a little bit, so Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him another nevuah and says, "Kumis alech ba'aretz, the yarkel rachma kilchot inena." So Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him that he promises him a second time around he's going to receive Eretz Yisrael. Kumis Aleich Baretz, walk throughout the land. So what was the purpose of that? Why do you have to take the Shpetzi around the land? Kadosh Baruch Hu already promised him Eretz Yisrael. So there was Machlekes HaTanoim that appears in Maseches Bava Basra and Daf Kuf as to how to understand from the pure halachic vantage point what Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling Avraham Avinu with that phrase in the beginning of the second paragraph of Gimel of Parshat Lech. Kumis Aleich Baretz L'chol Zorach HaTanoim. So the Tana Rabbi Eliezer understood that pasuk in a very, very lumdish, very mikvashim, astagdish way. That the pasuk means that Avraham Avinu had been promised Eretz Yisrael, but if I promise to give you a gift, you don't own it yet. You don't acquire it yet. You have to make a kinyan on it. There's passions that kinyan on him. So Avraham Avinu was told that he has to make a kinyan. He wants to acquire Eretz Yisrael, should be his and his children's for the Dori Doros. He has to make a formal maisa kinyan on it. So how would you be koneh Eretz Yisrael? If I was looking up in Chayshim Mishpat, how do you coin Eretz Yisrael? You're Avraham Avinu, and you're trying to scratch your head and figure out, how do I coin Eretz Yisrael? So normally the way you coin a karka is b'kesef. Okay, who's Avraham Avinu going to pay? What, the Kanani wasn't for sale. A shtar, but the Prizi and Yavusi, they're gonna ride him over. It doesn't make any sense. So there has to be some kind of a method that's available to be coin Eretz Yisrael. So the Yezza says that from here we learn the Din L'Doros that you can acquire karka through halicha. You're simply walking, taking a stroll. So if I want to sell you a piece of land, you could be kind of that land by simply walking up and down along the borders of that land. And Rabbi Eliezer the Tana says that's exactly what Avraham Avinu was doing. He was literally acquiring Eretz Yisrael in terms of Dinei Mamonos. And all the other Tanaim disagree and say it's not true that Avraham Avinu wasn't acquiring through Dinei Mamonos. That is not a valid mechanism for acquisition of land. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell him to do this? There should be a simon. It was like Derech Nevuah. It was a simon that just as Avraham Avinu was walking through the land, so too his children are going to come back in a few generations and they're going to conquer, they're going to acquire the land. But in terms of Avraham Avinu actually buying the land, that's meaningless. That's not a way of acquiring character. Even though the Tanoim have a machlokes as to when Avraham Avinu acquired it or not, the Gemara does have a comment also in Bava Basra, actually in the 8th Berakh of Bava Kama, of Bava Basra. The Gemara says that Eretz Yisrael was muhzekas modem avisenu. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Parshas Va'era, "V'nasati osalachem morashani Hashem." Kadosh Baruch Hu was talking to Moshe Rabbeinu before they had even entered into Eretz Yisrael, and Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to tell Klal Yisrael that Eretz Yisrael is a morasha. So morasha means that it's already theirs. It doesn't say it's going to be a Yerusha. Yerusha means that your relative hasn't died yet, and Achamev Yisrael Shani, you're going to get it. Morasha means it's already yours. It's your heritage. It already belongs to you. The Gemara says that Eretz Yisrael is mukhzekas lotam yavisenu. That in pure dinim mamonos, Eretz Yisrael belongs to us. We are the bile of Eretz Yisrael, even though we never stepped foot into it. The Kadosh Baruch was telling Moshe to talk to the generation who lived in Egypt. They were building pyramids in Goshen, and they were the bile. They had their name on the real estate in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara has a very, very intricate lomdisha question in Maseches Avodah Zarah in the fourth parak. Based on this phenomenon, that Klal Yisrael had a relationship with Eretz Yisrael as Bilam, even though they had never stepped foot in Eretz Yisrael yet. So the Gemara raises the question, we have a rule that eight of the Eisei Dover She'enu Shalom. Let's say, if I go over to your property and I bow down to it, so that doesn't create a shame of a Zohar on it. I don't have the ability to prohibit something that doesn't belong to me. So the Gemara asks a very, very lovely question. Torah says that when they came into Eretz Yisrael, they were obligated to destroy all the trees that had been worshipped as Avodah Zarah. The Asherahs had to be burnt, had to be destroyed. So the Gemara asked a very, very intricate question. Why? What made it Avodah Zarah? When the Goyim, the Kanani, the priests, the Yavus, they were all bowing down to all these trees, they were Ganavim, they were Gazlanim. They didn't own the trees. The trees grew in the ground. So those trees belonged to Klal Yisrael. Bishlama, let's say, if a Goy decided to worship something that belonged to him, kicks him, and you have to destroy it. But the trees didn't belong to them because they weren't the owners. So you see from the Gemara's question that the Gemara took this with the utmost seriousness. Chazal truly understood that this is the Kavanah Satorah, that Klal Yisrael were the absolute dirimamanistic owners of Eretz Yisrael long before the days of Yishuv Benun, back in the days predating Yishuv Benun, to such an extent that we don't quite understand why the Jews had to destroy the Asherahs. So Gemara gives an equally fascinating answer. The Gemara says that, let's say I own something and I give you a shus to worship it. I'm not giving it to you as a gift. It still belongs to me, but I'm letting you worship it. I'm okay. I'm happy that you're worshiping it. The Gemara says then, you do have the koach to asur it, as long as it's nicha to the bailam. The Gemara says, when Klal Yisrael worshiped the Egel, when they bowed down to the Egel, they basically gave a free ride to everybody to worship Avodah Zarah. Eilel hechi Yisrael, the Gemara says, mikan she'ivu alos harbe. that Nebuch, the people in Klaisel, were worshiping the Egel, so they were all on the bandwagon of Avodah Zarah. Anyone who was worshiping Avodah Zarah, they were on their team. They were all excited about it. The Gemara says, Apidin, that's what gave the Goyim in Arizona. The Goyim in Arizona didn't text the Goyim in Arizona, please worship my trees for me. But Apidin, once the Jews themselves indicated that they were okay with Avodah Zarah, so that opened up the door for the Goyim to worship the trees. And those trees now became awesome. So fascinating. Shachmat times the Amorites. In a million years, I wouldn't have thought of the Kasha. In a million years, I would have thought of the Teretz. But the Gemara says it. Where's the Kasha? Where is the Teretz? That was the mechanism of creating Asherah trees, because in pure Dini Mamonos, Klal owned Eretz Yisrael well before they actually stepped foot in Eretz Yisrael. So this relationship that the Avos already had with Eretz Yisrael, so this impacted in terms of Shmir Samitzus as well. This is the famous comment of the Ramban. There's a very, very famous Ramban that appears in a few places in Chumash. It's in Bachar Parshas Toldos. It appears again in Achrei Mos. But the Ramban develops this idea really as an answer to his question, that we know that the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Kedusha that Avraham Avinu observed the mitzvahs of Torah before they were given. He figured out Baruch HaKadosh, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted of us. So he figured out Shabbos, Kashrus, etc. And he did it. And even though the Mishnah only speaks about Avraham Avinu, the old Yisharim assume that if Avraham did it, so he probably told Yitzhak about it, Yitzhak probably told Yaakov about it. So the Avos was Shomu Kol Torah Kula, whatever that means. But the problem is that there's a flagrant violation of one of the Dini HaTorah, actually one of the Dini that appears in this week's Pasha, namely the prohibition of marrying two sisters. That's one of the Arayas. It's a Pasuk in Pasha Sachri Mos. So how in the world did Yaakov Avinu remain married to Rachel and to Leah? Wasn't that a violation of Achaz Ishto? So in terms of Sheva Mitzvah Noach, that wouldn't have been a problem, because even though non-Jews are also obligated to observe Gili Arayos, their list of Gili Arayos is much less than the Jewish list. The list that we read in Achrei Mos, this week's Parsha, is a long, long list that applies to Jews. Goyim have a very, very limited degree of Gili Arayos. Marrying two sisters is not one of those on the list for the Bnei Noach. So how could it be that on the one hand, the Avos kept the Torah, the other hand, the Yaakov Avinu is clearly in violation of this Isra Chava B'Yosei, this Akaris. So how do we make sense of that? So there are many, many answers that are given. So one of the most popular answers that's given is the Ramban. The Ramban explains that the others only volunteer to keep the Torah before Matan Torah, only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Lo'etz. Why is that? So the Ramban explains that the Ikar Mokom of Shmiras HaMitzvos is in Eretz Yisrael. That the real plan, the ultimate plan of Shmiras HaMitzvos is when you're in the Heichal HaMelech, you're in the palace of the king. So that's when you serve the king. That's the Ikar Shmiras HaMitzvos. Nebuch, we're not in the palace of the king. Nebuch, we're in Golan. So Kadosh Baruch Hu told us we have to keep mitzvahs of Chutz Lo'etz also. Nobody should think, some people mistakenly read the Ramban. Ramban, the Shum part of also didn't mean such a thing. Some people mistakenly think the Ramban is saying mitzvahs of Chutz Lo'etz is the Rabbanan. That's absolutely wrong. There's not even a shemitz of truth to that. The Ramban says, of course, that all shmiras and mitzvahs in Chutz Lo'etz is their ice, except for the agricultural mitzvahs. Shabbos is their ice, and Pesach is their ice, and Tefillin is their ice, and Taas Mishpacha, all the dinim their ice. Huh? But the thrust of the mitzvahs is different. The goal of the mitzvahs is different. The ikar goal of mitzvahs is really there. So we do it in Chutz Lo'etz also, because Kadosh Baruch Hu told us too, but the real emes of Makom Shmiras HaMitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. If that's the case, the Ramban says, so if you live post-Matan Torah, where we have to keep mitzvahs of Chutz Lo'etz, because that's what the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, so you have no choice. But if you live pre-Matan Torah, so your only observance of the mitzvahs outside of the Sheva Mitzvahs is only voluntary anyway, so it only makes sense to volunteer to do mitzvahs when you're in the palace of the king. To volunteer to do mitzvahs in Hadad Aram, or in Mitzrayim, or other places, so that doesn't make any sense. To volunteer to do mitzvahs live in Chevron, that makes sense. To volunteer to do mitzvahs out of Eretz Yisrael wouldn't make any sense. And that's why Yaakov Avinu, in fact, remained married to Rachel and Leah, calls about him in Chutz Lo'etz. And actually, Ramban explains that when he actually arrived in Eretz Yisrael, it coincided exactly with the moment that Rachel died, but he owed Kibbutz Eretz Avoya Frasa. As he's entering into Eretz Yisrael, Rachel died. And in a sense, that had to happen, says the Ramban, because there was no way that Yaakov could remain married to both of them in Eretz Yisrael. So that concept that the Ramban is talking about is primarily a pre-Matan Torah concept. We live in a world post-Matan Torah, so we have to observe mitzvahs in Chutz Lo'etz also. But the question is there any truth of that Ramban for us as well? Is there any lesson that we can extract from that Ramban in terms of our own relationship to Eretz Yisrael? The Ramban seems to be telling us that even post-Matan Torah, a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is on a higher level than a mitzvah done in Chutz Lo'etz. The question is that just in the world of Hashkafa and Machshava, or is there some significance in that in the world of Halacha? So what would be the din as follows? Let's say you have a situation where a person has an opportunity to do a given mitzvah, either in Chutz Lo'etz or in Eretz Yisrael. So should he opt to do it in Eretz Yisrael? He can do either one. What's the scenario of that? The common scenario, the guy's flying to Eretz Yisrael, he's about to land, and the question is, should he daven and put in his tefillin and say Kriya Shema on the plane when he's flying over Cyprus? Or should you wait the extra hour and do it in Eretz Yisrael? Again, this is putting aside all the other factors of davening on planes and missing by Krishna and missing your ride, you know, putting all that aside. Assuming that all other factors are equal, I have a pure question as follows. Is there any halachic significance to wait? Is there anything to be gained by waiting? So if one takes this Ramban very, very seriously, and the Ramban meant that Lamaisa even today, so then yes, so that would be a cheshbon, would be part of the calculation, Shmiras HaMitzvahs, if I have a choice to say Kriya Shema flying over the Mediterranean, or a choice to say it at the airport in Eretz Yisrael, it would make more sense to do it in Eretz Yisrael. That would be a greater key of the mitzvah. Yeah, I'm not saying that we necessarily pass that way. Some poskim did pass that way, and others question that. But that idea is that a halachic consideration. This is something that has its roots ultimately way back in Sefer Bereishis. Yeah, and so we find that there clearly was a concept of Eretz Yisrael back in the old days, back in the days of the Avos. What that translated to in terms of did Klal Yisrael literally make an acquisition? Was there a formal kinyan made on it? Did it belong to Klal Yisrael in terms of the Mamonos? How did it impact the Torah Shmiras HaMitzvah? So all of those are sugyas of pre-Matan Torah. But the next major development that happened, Klal Yisrael's relationship with Eretz Yisrael, of course, happened post-Matan Torah, 40 years after Matan Torah, when they entered into Eretz Yisrael en masse for the first time. So when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, so a few important halachic things occurred. In addition to the ones that are fairly obvious in terms of Trubus, Master Shemitah, etc., there may have been almost slight nuances of changes even within other parts of Shemiras and Mitzvahs. Other mitzvahs that are not Eretz Yisrael proper connected to, mitzvahs that are not per se agricultural, not really Eretz Yisrael mitzvahs, there were a few shinuim, a few changes here and there in terms of the Shemiras and Mitzvahs that occurred when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. So one of the changes, again, I don't mean changes like the people decide to change. I mean, the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that there would be certain shinuyim in terms of Shemiras and Mitzvahs once they entered into Eretz Yisrael. So one of them was in the realm of Shechita. So the Psukim say in Parshas Re'eh that when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, etc., so all of a sudden the Din of Shechita are going to be different. So there's a big machlekes at Tanoim, the first Bek of Chulim. What does that mean? The Din of Shechita are going to be different. How different are they going to be? So there are two different opinions. There's one opinion that says the Dinim are going to become more chomer. One says the Dinim are going to become a little bit more kal. So we usually assume that the Dinim are going to become a little bit more kal. Namely, Kol Zman, the Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar, so then they were not really allowed to eat meat. The only time they were able to eat meat is that they brought kabbams. They had to come to the Mishkan and offer kabbams. As soon as they crossed the Yarden, they entered into Eretz Yisrael, Hutulam Besar Taiva. Then and only then were they given the halachas of Chulin. Then they were allowed to shech whatever meat they wanted. And the dinim of shechita that used to be only karbonos oriented were now transferred over to chulin as well. So that shinui, that change, so to speak, so that change did not occur at Matan Torah. That change occurred at Knesset La'aretz. That's one way of reading the Pesukim in Parshas Re'eh. The Gemara quotes another way of interpreting. It's hard for us to know because Tishah hasn't happened in 3,500 years. But the other Tana says, no, the other way around, that Kol Zman, that they were in the Midbar, they didn't have to shech animals. All they had to do is just cut the simanim. They had to just cut the esophagus, the trachea. They didn't have to do all the details of the shechita were not given. The halacha Moshe Messina, they have to shech in a very, very specific manner. We call the five areas of the shechita. Those halachas were given to Moshe Rabbeinu only to begin to be put into practice after they entered the Eretz Yisrael. So rather than, according to the first opinion, that the dinim of shechita became more lenient, they actually became more severe, they became more serious. And it was only when they entered into Eretz Yisrael that the dinim of shechita that we know today actually were put into practice. So again, shechita has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael proper, but here we find the specific area of halacha that was impacted by Klal Yisrael being in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara has a very, very fascinating shaila in the first bracha of Masechet Chulin, which sounds like a strange historical question, sounds like it's no relevance at all. The Gemara says, what was the din as follows? Let's say a person was in the Midbar, it was the day before they crossed into the Yarden, Yidim Chesh Nisan, about to cross into the Yarden, and he didn't have to shecht any meat. He just killed the animal, whatever, cut the siman, but he didn't have to do it formally shechita. And he had that meat, and he turned that meat into a salami or something, and then he schlepped that on his backpack over the Yarden, and I was camping out on the other side of the Yarden to come to Gilgal, and he wants to eat that salami. So that salami wasn't shechted. Kahalacha. So the Gemara is a strange shaila. So I love the shaila. When it was, the animal was killed, it was mutadit. On the other hand, now they crossed into the Yarden, they crossed the Yarden, and now the shechita kicks in. So the zilch shechita impact on the meat that was not shechted properly. Or do I say, hold hutra hutra? Once it was mutter in the midbar, it becomes mutter once they enter the Yisrael, or do I not? So in that Gemara, Rashi throws his hands up and says, my dahava hava. Rashi says, who cares? Interesting shaila. Rashi says, my nafkamina. So the Rosh in that Gemara says, no, it's a big nafkamina. Nafkamina dina. The Rosh says, let's say the following. Let's say a person has some food, the food is mutter, and then as the guy's cooking up his food, So all of a sudden, he gets a message, gets the text from Beis Nagadol. We just made a gezeirah through Rabbanan against that particular food. They say, guys, Bishalakam wasn't instituted yet. So let's say the guy is cooking up your dinner, and all of a sudden you get a big flash on your screen that says, Bishalakam just prohibited by the Beis Nagadol, Bishalayim, don't eat any food cooked by the non-Jews. So the Rosh wants to know, what would the din be? So when it was cooked, when it was prepared by Hefter. And now the issue kicks in. Does it become also, does it remain Beteiro? Again, I don't know how common that shaila is going to be, but whatever it is, not a quirk of a halacha that emanates from a strange relationship that Eretz Yisrael impacts in other mitzvahs. But there are other mitzvahs also that Eretz Yisrael plays a role, which are not Eretz Yisrael proper. Let's say, for example, the Gemara says that the mitzvah of Korban Pesach was offered in Mitzrayim the first time, and then it was offered again the first year in the Midbar, and then it was not offered for another 38 years. They didn't bring a Korban Pesach all the years in the Midbar, and they didn't start to bring the Korban Pesach again until they came into Eretz Yisrael. Again, what does Eretz Yisrael have to do with the Korban Pesach proper? They had a Mishkan, they had a functioning base of Mikdash Kwanz and Mishkan all those 38 years, and yet Korban Pesach, the Hayak Kizabal Aretz, that you need Knis Laretz in order to reset the button in terms of Korban Pesach. The Gemara has a question about Bechoros, where the Kaddish would call Bechor, but the mitzvah of Bechoros applied in the Midbar Natz, a whole slew of different halachas that are not really Eretz Yisrael proper related. And yet, those mitzvahs didn't literally kick in. They were given to Klai Yisrael. They learned about them. They discussed them in the Midbar. But they didn't actually put into practice until they entered into Eretz Yisrael. But of course, the mitzvahs that were mostly impacted by coming to Eretz Yisrael were the agricultural mitzvahs, the mitzvahs of Baretz, and Trumas, and Isis, and Shemit, etc. Of course, did not kick in until they literally entered into Eretz Yisrael. And here, the Gemara tells us that they didn't even kick in right away. Just historically, they crossed the Yarden. And then the first 7 years, they were involved in conquering the land. And the next 7 years, they were involved in dividing up the land. And it took the 14 years, the Sheva Shekibshu, Sheva Shekhoku, until finally everyone was in place and the Kibush Aretz was complete. The Gemara says that window of 14 years was a very, very strange window. On the one hand, they were in Eretz Yisrael. The whole Jewish people were in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, they were still fighting battles. They were still dividing up the land. The Gemara says that Trumas and Maestros didn't apply yet. Shemitah didn't apply yet. The whole Shemitah cycle with the Yovel cycle, nothing started yet. Everything was on hiatus until the 14 years were over. And then Truma began, then Maisa began, then Shemit and Yovel began, etc. So at that point, we call that the Kibush of Yeshua. But again, it took a little bit of time, a little bit of delay mechanism. The only mitzvah that may have kicked in right away was the mitzvah of Challah, right, based on a pasuk that even though Challah is also linked to Eretz Yisrael, somehow that started right away. So why that should be so? Again, that's a halachic hashkafic question. Managed out of Challah from all the others. That was the halacha there. True, Mitzvah, Shemit, everything was put on hold until the 14 years. So Baruch Hashem, finally the 14 years came, and everything started, and they started counting Shemit, and they started counting Yovel, and they were Mitzvah, Shemit, Mitzvah, and Bikurim, and all the Mitzvah, Shemit, Baruch applied, and none of those Mitzvahs applied in Chutz Laaretz. They all applied in Eretz Yisrael. They applied. Everything was Olam Kivun Hakol Noeg, until the next major event that potentially impacted on the halachic significance of Eretz Yisrael was when part of Eretz Yisrael was conquered by the non-Jews. Actually a good significant majority of Eretz Yisrael was conquered. And that was well before Churban Bayis Rishon, in the days of the Golos of the Aseret HaShvatim, when Melech Ashur, Sancheirav came and basically conquered the whole northern part of Eretz Yisrael. So he took it to exile. The first nations that he exiled were the ones who were on the east side of the Yarden. That was the first one in his line of attack. And soon afterwards, he crossed the Yarden and he took pretty much everybody. He almost took Eretz Yehuda also, who was very, very close to conquering Yerushalayim, and that was the nace that's recorded in Sefer Malachim. We allude to that at the end of the Haggadah and some of the Zmiros, the special nace that occurred there, because Rabbah saved them from Melech Ashur. But a good part of Klal Yisrael were no longer in Eretz Yisrael. And the question is, what does that do in terms of the mitzvahs of Tzvi Yisbaretz? So the Gemara tells us in Masechet Erechin that one mitzvah that now disappears, at least in our Torah, is the mitzvah of Yovel. The whole institution of Yovel, the Parshas Bahar, ceases to exist, because when it comes to Yovel, the Torah says, the literal translation in English, you take a look at the Liberty Bell, you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land of all the inhabitants thereof. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was the translation. I remember Lahabdul Elif Elif Abdullah between the Pasuk, but some of you will probably remember the Ten Commandments. I don't mean the Assassin's Business, I mean Charleston Heston, Ten Commandments. So I saw it many times as a young boy. So I didn't understand the significance or the insignificance of it at the time, but I remember the very, very last scene. So they have Moses standing there with his arms outstretched, looking over Eretz Yisrael. He's an old, old man, and he's about to die. The psukim from Parshas Vezel Sabracha, and the last words of the curtain goes down, and Moshe Rabbeinu declares, "You shall proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Ma inyan that no pun intended. Inyan yoyful. It's the last scene. It wasn't doing anything. So that puzzle. If you're writing a movie about Parshas Mahar, so you put that in. So some Amaritzik Hollywood writer decided that puzzle makes sense at the end of the Zayt Bracha. Try to lay down the superstar. It's nothing to do with the Moshe Rabbeinu's death. So whatever it is. Anyway, so that puzzle has been used and misused time and time again. But Lahavdil, the world of Halacha, that puzzle is very significant because the Gemara says it's based on that puzzle that Yovel seeks to exist. Because Yovel ceases to exist, according to many Rishonim, Shemitah ceases to exist as well, at least on a level of the Araisa, because at least the way many Rishonim, probably where we pass in, that Shemitah and Yovel are a package deal, and therefore Shemitah today, when I say today, I mean for the last 2,700 plus years, has not been Midat Torah, it's only been Midat Rabbanan. Because that statement is probably true, I say probably because not everyone agrees to that, but according to most Rishonim, that statement is true. That is why we have a lot of leniencies in Shemitah today. That's why we treat Shemitah today as being a Derabban. It doesn't mean that it's everything goes, but certain leniencies that we have. If you move the clock ahead a couple of thousand years, so the entire Heta Mechira controversy that erupted in the end of the 1800s. About the permissibility, according to others, the lack of permissibility to sell Eretz Yisrael to the non-Jews, that was all working with the assumption that Shemitah is only there on bottom. The Gemara is explicit that if Shemitah would be deraisa, that trick's not going to work. The whole heter can only be discussed if you assume that Shemitah is banazes derabbanan. What makes Shemitah derabbanan? According to most, it's because of the lack of Yovel, which again is a throwback to the days of Aseres HaShvatim. So halacha lemaisa in Eretz Yisrael today, in Tavshin Pei Gimel, there are shadows that are being pasked based on realities and history of 2,700 plus years ago. So again, today was a halacha slash history session to try to just understand that there are a relationship there to Yisrael goes back quite a long time, and some of the ups and downs and the bumps along the way in terms of the conditions of Aretz, in terms of the impact on mitzvahs, issues that are being pasked today have their precedence in well over 2,000 years ago. The next major event that occurred, of course, was the Churban. Churban Bayis Rishon. And here it gets very, very tricky as to what exactly happened to Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says that, well, the Kedusha came about in the first place through the Kibush, we spoke about before, the Shubinun conquered Eretz Yisrael, which would lead us to believe that if he conquered it, that was the Makadesh, well, if the Kibush is Batel, then the Kedusha is also Batela. And that's how we paskin, that once the first Kibush was no longer present, then the Kedusha became Batela. So one has to be very quick to modify that statement. When we say that the Kedusha is Batela, what we mean is, the Kedusha vis-a-vis Trumas and Maestras, etc., vis-a-vis Mitzvah Tos Baretz, that in no shape or form means that Eretz Yisrael is not special. Doesn't mean it's not the Mechum HaShechina, doesn't mean it's not the Heichel HaMelech. The Chassam Sofer points this out in the Tshuva. This is obvious. The Chassam Sofer writes, Eretz Yisrael was special in the days of the Yavos. The Yavos lived hundreds of years before Yeshua Ben Nun was born. There was no Jewish army in the days of the Yavos in the sense of conquering Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael had significance well before there was a Jewish army. But that it's the kibush, it's the koyach of the kibush Yeshua ben Nun that is the makadesh of Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis Trumas and Maaseres. And for that, unfortunately, when that kibush disappears, then the kedusha disappears as well. And that's why we pass in halacha that in that interim of time after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, so the kedushas Eretz ceased to exist at least at a level of the araisa, and Trumas and Maaseres at least at a level of the araisa for sure disappear. Now the question is, what happens next? So the next major event that occurred. According to the days of Ezra. So the days of Ezra, before Ezra, during the days of Ezra, so there was Shiva Sion, there was a group of Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael. Not a whole lot in terms of the ratio of the Jews who came back, those who stayed behind was very, very small. But there was a movement to return back to Eretz Yisrael. And Ezra came back with the Gemara calls Bia Shnia, Kibush, Yerusha Shnia. So what happens at that point during Yerusha Shnia? So this was a big, big question. So the Rambam's opinion is that even though Ezra was re-Mekadosh Eretz Yisrael, even though he did it a little bit differently, he didn't conquer. Ezra did not come with a conquering army. In fact, during the days of Ba'asheni, there was almost very, very little of a Jewish army. The only very, very small window where there was a Jewish army was during the days of the Cheshbonai. For the overwhelming majority of Ba'asheni, the Jews were under the Persians, then they were under the Greeks, and then they were eventually under the Romans. There was a small window in the time of Chanukah, a little bit after that, that Chazra Machlis Yisrael for some time. So comes the Halachim says, Ezra was not Makadosh to Kibush, he had a different method of Kedusha, that was through Yishuv. Simply, they moved in, the Jews just were Machzik, they moved into certain places. That's what the Gemara says, that the Harbik Krochim Kavshu Olim Bavim, Kavshu Mitzrayim, Kavshu Olim Bavim. There were many parts of Eretz Yisrael that actually were never re-inhabited. There were parts of Eretz Yisrael that had been technically part of Eretz Yisrael in the first time around, the Bayis Rishon, that were not part of Eretz Yisrael the second time around. The Gemara even singles out some of those cities. The Gemara talks about a place called Beit Shan. Now, again, whether that's any resemblance living or dead to the Beit Shan of today is another story. The Gemara talks about Ashkelon. Whether that has any resemblance to Ashkelon of today is also a question. But the Gemara talks about certain cities that, technically speaking, did not really have Kedusha in the days of Bayi Sheni because they were never really occupied. They were really non-Jewish cities. Basically, the Goyim lived in these places. So you had this whole new type of Kedusha, which was accomplished not through tanks and planes, through arms, but it was accomplished through Chazaka, through Yishuv, and this Kedusha kicked in, and now presumably all the mitzvot were actually come back to life. So that's what many Rishonim say, that in fact they did come back to life. Trumas and Ma'aseh, everything became Deraisa, with the exception of Shemitah and Yovel, because you didn't have Kodesh Ve'alel. Everything else perhaps did come back to life. And the Rambam claims that not. The Rambam says that in order for Trumas and Ma'aseh to come back to life, you have to have Bias Kulchem. It's not enough just to be in Eretz Yisrael. It's not enough just to have a couple of thousand people moving into Eretz Yisrael. You have to have the Jewish people as a whole coming into Eretz Yisrael. But that means literally every Jew, a rove of Klai Yisrael, so you have to have a very, very large amount of Jews who are taking over Eretz Yisrael. Not necessarily taking over with arms, but they have to have some kind of a Mekadesh. And if you don't have that, so then Trumas and Ma'aseh fall short. And that was the Rambam Shita. The Trubas and Maestras, Bisman Bayishen, even in the heart of the days of Ezra, were only Midirabbanan. Of course, the next major event in terms of impacting on Kedushas Eretz Yisrael was Churban Bayisheni. So now what happened? So we already had a precedent for that. You remember we had Kedusha Rishona, and we had the Bitl of Kedusha Rishona. So presumably we should follow that precedent and say, well, the Kedusha Shniyah happened in the days of Ezra because the Jews were living there. When the Romans eventually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and subsequently exiled the overwhelming majority of the Jews, so then we should assume the Kedusha disappeared and whatever mitzvah Torah Baris will cease to exist. So that was a big machlekes of Rishonim, whether that actually happened or not. So the Rambam claims that whatever existed in the days of Ezra exists at Hayom Hazeh. The only kind of Kedusha that was Betela was Kedusha that was brought about through conquering. Kedusha that came about through inhabiting. So that stays in the Olam Bor. Why there's a Pasuk Svar, that's already a whole other story. But that's the view of the Rambam. Not everyone agrees to that. So in the end of the day, we have mitzvahs that Tzuris Baretz today. There's no question. We have Shemitah today, and we have Trumas and Ma'aseh today. We have many, many mitzvahs that Tzuris Baretz. But according to the overwhelming majority of the opinions, it's only Midirabbanan. Midaraisa, we don't have Shemitah today. We don't have Yovel today. We don't have Trumah today. We don't have Ma'aseh today. We observe all those mitzvahs Midirabbanan. We observe a lot of things Midirabbanan. We keep out the Sheni Midrabanan, and we observe Mukta Midrabanan. We light Ner's Chanukah, read the Megillah Midrabanan. So the Torah wants us to keep the mitzvahs Midrabanan also. So it doesn't mean we should take these mitzvahs lightly, but it just means that in the greater scheme of things, so the Trumas and Ma'aseh that we have today is a throwback. It's a Zecher. It's a throwback to the days of old, but it's probably not Midaraisa for a variety of reasons, either because of Kedusha's Betela, or perhaps there's no lack of Bias Kulchem. So you have a lot of limitations in terms of mitzvah Tuzmans. For the overwhelming majority of the last 2,000 years, this was pretty much a moot question because there was almost nobody who lived in Eretz Yisrael. There had a handful of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. That's why if you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, look at the tour in the end of your day, we talk about the Mitzvah Tuz Baretz, he lumps it all to one siman. One siman, all Shulchan Aruch, the whole Mitzvah Tuz Baretz, because they have very, very little to say. Because it was just these quotes, one Mishnah after another, one Rambam after another, but there was nothing going on. There was no shadows, no new issues were coming up. Because the Ma'aseh, there were very, very few people living there. You always had pockets of people that were always Jews in Eretz Yisrael. From the days of the Churban until now, there's never been a time when there was no Yishuv at all. But the Yishuv was very, very far apart, very, very small, and the greatest scheme of Jews in the world, very insignificant. Just to give you just a reference point as to how small the numbers were, there is a famous letter that the Ramban wrote when he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. Ramban arrived in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Spain, but he was thrown out of Spain when he won the debate. Generally speaking, when you debated in the Middle Ages, so whether you won or lost, didn't make much of a difference. The only thing that happened, either they killed you or they exiled you. Those are pretty much the only two outcomes of the debate, no matter what happened. So the Ramban got off easy because there were some people, some friends in the upper echelons who liked the Ramban. So he got off easy and they just exiled, just threw him out of space. At the age of 70, he's walking through Europe to try to find his way to Eretz Yisrael. So finally arrives in Eretz Yisrael. He sends a letter back to his family about what life was like in Eretz Yisrael. But the bottom line is they didn't have a minyan for the young Meroim. Not that they didn't have the breakaway third Hashkama minyan. No. They didn't have 10 Jews. So they had to pay a few people to come from Shechem at the time. There was apparently some very, very small enclave of Jews in Shechem. So It may sound bizarre to us today, but you had to hire somebody from Shechem to come to be mashing the minion in Eretz Yisrael. So next time you're in Eretz Yisrael and you complain that you have to run to the 12 o'clock, you know, Maariv and Shtubach or something, so you should be happy the Rambam would have given anything to make that Shtubach minion on Rosh Hashanah for that night. So again, there were small pockets of Jews, very, 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 very small. In the 1500s, so following the expulsion from Spain, so there was a whole influx of Jews that arrived in Eretz Yisrael. And the entire community of Tzfat began and had begun before that, but it took on the significance that it did. So many, many of the halachas, Benjamin Hogan, that we have Adayir Nezer, have a throwback to the days of Tzfat. Probably the most popular meeting that we have is the meeting of Kabbal Shabbos. But the whole Seichel of Shabbos, L'chadoidi, was all thanks to that community of Tzfat. And many, many other minhagim that we have, many things that we have from the Kisvi Ari and things like that nature, all come from that tkufa, that short tkufa in Eretz Yisrael. But again, for the most part, in terms of real halacha in Eretz Yisrael, there was very, very little. There was very, very little mitzvah to Eretz that was actually practiced, because the mice of the Jews, for the most part, didn't even own land. There was a big machlekes at the time in the early 1500s between the Beis Yosef and the Mabit about what do you do in Eretz Yisrael when you have land that belongs to Goyim. How does that impact on the kedusha per shvius? Normally, when you have fruit that grows in the Shnas HaShmita, that's kedusha, that's to treat it appropriately. So does that carry over if you're buying grapes from a non-Jew? So do those grapes have to be treated a certain manner or not? So it's a big, big, big machlekes. And that machlekes has played out to this very day. Mamash Adayim is there. That machlekes is still machlekes till today. What started as a machlekes in the Beis Yosef and Mabit is a machlekes Yishalayim and Bnei Brach until today. Then Yishalayim, the minig was the Hokel, and Bnei Brach, the minig was the Hachmer. And still, hundreds and hundreds of years later, the issues have not yet been resolved. Somebody just called me a couple of weeks ago with a shaila about wine that had conditioned shvius to it. So he wanted to know about the mafkrit for the shasabir and the special alaseid, whatever different shailas. So he said to me that it wasn't really kedushas. Is how he presented it. He said that it was really from goyish stuff. So whether it may not have even had full kedushas shvius to it. So I said to him, you're in Yerushalayim. So I said, in the Midrash Yerushalayim has always been the Hakel to treat that as Lach Nishrius. So he sounded on the phone. I was crazy. He said, but we're not going to issue, we're not like in Bnei Brach, we're not like the Chazanish. So that machlekes still hasn't stopped. Because we were on 500 years, they're still fighting it out between the Beis Yosef and London. Every couple of summers at NCSY Kollel, so they asked me to be part of one of the Teolim up north. So to be like one of the tour guides in Tiberia and Tzfat and that kind of stuff. So there are different kinds of tour guides. Some tour guides in Tzfat will take you to the cemetery, tell you stories and dibbuks and that kind of stuff. So those guys, the guys who want that, don't come on my tour. The guys who want to hear about the machlekes and the Beis Yosef that took place here, want to know about what happens if you made a mistake in Pirsa Torah, that's the Mari Berab that happened here, where the Erev Chatzeres belongs to Mishul that happened here, where, you know, the Chadish Smicha that happened here. I try to give a tour guide. Tour guided towards all the halachic issues that arrived in Tzfat. So they all happened in Tzfat in the course of those 50 years or so. It wasn't such a long period. So again, halacha per se in terms of Eretz Yisrael was almost minuscule during all this time. Then all of a sudden, somehow sent this whole idea that Jews began slowly to trickle back to Eretz Yisrael. And as it began in the late 1800s to trickle back to Eretz Yisrael, so some of them who went back were people who were very interested in Shmiras HaTorah and Mitzvahs, and they started to ask some very, very real shailas that unfortunately had not been discussed with any degree of halacha maisa for hundreds, almost thousands of years. And thus began all the whole machlokes about that. The Mechira began at that time, the end of the 1800s, and all the Siddurim that had over Misad HaTrumus, the nice things that had been so out of use for so long, all of a sudden, you know, became back on the radar screen. One of the, if not the biggest, the biggest force in terms of the reinstitution, in terms of the ma'isish of Yitzchak Baritz, was the Chazanish. The Chazanish arrived in Eretz Yisrael in the early, the late 20s, early 30s, and he lived in Eretz Yisrael till he passed away. And when he came to Eretz Yisrael, so he dedicated a lot of his time to the relearning and to the reteaching and to the re-being kaveya. All the Siddurim, all these halachas, things that have been so obsolete all these years, so much was done. And the elders who followed, and others until this very day. Frank Kanievsky, who just passed away, was also one from our generation, and the great, you know, forces in terms of Mitzvah Tzolos Baretz, in terms of from that he wrote in this area. So all of a sudden, a whole new interest in Mitzvah Tzolos Baretz has taken place. So I think what we try to accomplish in the short amount of time that we have tonight, as we span 3,500 years or so. So we see that the tremendous role that the show has played in terms of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, in terms of practically speaking, the Tzolos Baretz, the impact that's had on other things as well. We didn't even get a chance to even touch upon all the not halachic parts of Eretz Yisrael, the machshava part of Eretz Yisrael, the chibas part of Eretz Yisrael, the gula part of Eretz Yisrael. Another time, another place, we'll talk about that. But tonight is usually halacha slot, so we try to keep ourselves to the dal amas shalacha. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the opportunity. Bet Hashem, the next year we'll give about the topic at some point. So hopefully, Meir Ben Hamikdash. So we'll give the last part of the story about what's going to happen. Meir Ben Hamikdash. So what the unique status is going to be of Eretz Yisrael in Bayis Shlishi? What's going to happen? What's going to change? How does Yuma Kadosh Eretz Yisrael? So things of that nature. Bet Hashem, stay tuned for that part of the show. Hopefully,
No, it was kept until when? It was kept until Sunday.
Well, it was definitely until Sunday.